Get seated and we'll get started, please.
Well, we need to get out of here before dark tonight. It's an easy one.
We have a quorum, and it's just after 6, so we'll go ahead and get started. I'm Robert Burns, the chair of the Northern Regional Advisory Council. We'll start with introductions. Jim?
I'm Jim Gaskill from South Weber, and I represent public at large.
John Blazard from Camas, representing agriculture.
John Wall from Riverdale, representing public at large.
I'm Russ Lawrence, representing public at large from Ogden.
Bryce Thurgood Perry, public at large.
R. Jeffrey Hicks, public at large.
Kristen Purdy from Ogden, non-consumptive.
And Justin Dolan with the Division of Wildlife. I'm the executive secretary and I'm a non-voting member.
And again, I'm Robert Burns. I live in Centerville. I represent the public at large. We do have two members that have asked to be excused, John Leonard and Craig Van Tassel, and then a couple people, or at least Paul Callie's called me and told me he'll be a little bit late, but we should probably get a couple more people coming in. So if you would join me in turning off the ringers on your cell phones, we could have an uninterrupted meeting. Our purpose here tonight is to hear presentations from the Division of Wildlife on wildlife management issues. After that, we'll have questions from the public, then we'll have questions from the council, then we'll have comments from the public. If you wish to comment on an action item, please fill out a blue card. They're in the back on the table. We'll give people representing themselves 3 minutes, and we'll give people representing groups 5 minutes during the comment period. After that, we'll close the meeting off, or close that part of the meeting off to the public, and we'll have comments from the council, motions, deliberation on those motions, and then we'll vote. We make recommendations to the Wildlife Board, and the Wildlife Board is the body that sets policy for wildlife in the state of Utah. With that, we'll go to our agenda. Chair would entertain a motion to approve the agenda for tonight's meeting.
I move we approve the agenda for tonight's meeting.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion from Jim Gaskill and a second from Russ Lawrence to approve the agenda for tonight's meeting. All in favor, please say aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
It's unanimous. You should have received the minutes of the August 6th meeting by email. I did not receive any requests for any amendments. Are there any? Seeing none, the chair would entertain a motion to approve those minutes.
I'll move to approve.
Is there a second? John? Okay. We have a motion from Russ Lawrence and a second from John Wall to approve the August 6, 2014 minutes of the Northern Regional Advisory Council. All in favor, say aye and raise your hand, please.
Aye.
We have one, two.
I abstain. I wasn't there last meeting.
We have 7-4, one abstention due to not being present for that meeting. The Wildlife Board meeting update. On the 28th of August, the Wildlife Board meeting met on the items that we had met on the 6th. On the turkey depredation, they did tighten up the language a little bit, the division did, so that in their presentation, they felt that there would be no possibility of transferring a permit to someone and someone being able to sell that even tighter than when we saw it. The Wildlife Board did pass it as presented, and my feeling was that they felt that if you excluded public lands from those buffer areas, that it would inhibit their ability to handle those depredating turkeys. So that's the reason why they didn't follow our motion. They did, on the fee schedules, they did increase the non-resident U permit from 300 to 1,000. They felt that non-residents would be interested in getting those tags, and we could get a little more money out of that. So other than that, they passed all the action items as presented. Are there any questions on the Wildlife Board's actions? Seeing none, we'll go to the regional update.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, and welcome everybody out to the RAC meeting tonight. I'll just give a brief update on what's going on with the division and the region in particular. Our wildlife section is getting ready for the waterfowl youth hunt this coming Saturday, and also the upland game youth hunt that includes gray partridge and chucker partridge. And then our general waterfowl opener will be October 4th. And most of the frag treatments, Phragmites treatments on our waterfowl management areas have been completed for the year. And so that's wrapped up. Our wildlife biologists are busy writing bighorn unit management plans and also mountain goat unit management plans. I wanted to remind everybody that this year there's an extension on the pheasant season, so you're allowed to hunt an extended length if you're on state, federal, or private land that we've leased for public hunting. So keep that in mind, and if you're not familiar with that, please check out the guidebook. We are putting together capture plans. We have two captures planned this coming winter, one for Antelope Island mule deer, and the second is for bighorn sheep on Newfoundland Mountain. So if you'd like to get involved in either one of those, let me know, and we'll get you plugged in. In our law enforcement section, Trevor Doman is continuing his training. He's the new officer here in Box Elder County, and I believe his training will be completed about the middle to towards the third week in October, so he'll be a fully standalone officer at that point. Our law enforcement guys also want to report that they are interacting with a lot of the archery hunters, and the archery hunters this year are seeing a fair number of small bucks, although everything's fairly scattered. In our outreach section, we had a great waterfowl youth fair at Farmington Bay. Last weekend, we had about 1,500 kids show up, and they had just a great time. It was a good event. The outreach sections also had good participation in the day-old chick program, and we had 400 chicks that were given out to interested parties to raise and then release during the just prior to the hunts. And of the 400, we had about 90% survival, so we had good survival on those, and they'll get out in the field. One little setback, we've been working on a new water system at our Hardware Ranch Wildlife Management Area, and we've encountered another hiccup, and as a result, we'll not have clean water at the ranch this winter. We'll have to go ahead and re-energize the old system, which means we'll still have flushing toilets, but nothing potable, so that project's been put on hold for at least another year. Our administrative section, we wanted to remind everybody that bobcat sales start October 1st. You're allowed 6 permits this year, and there's no quota on the, or no cap or quota on the number of permits that can be sold. In our habitat section, they're currently working on a lop and scatter project in Telephone Hollow, which is on the Uintas, to open up some areas for bighorn sheep and elk and deer. And then our habitat section is also putting on the final touches on several of our wildlife management area plans, and you'll be seeing those coming up here in the near future through the RAC. We have two big bull hog projects in Box Elder County. Bull hog projects are, there's a kind of an attachment that goes on the front of a like a skid steer, and it kind of hugs a juniper tree and just basically pulverizes it. And so we have two really big projects going on in Grouse Creek and Park Valley, and those projects are, again, designed to deal with fuel loads and enhance wildlife habitat. We're also in the process of doing some riparian restoration in West Box Elder County by using beavers. The guys are out this week actually installing starter dams and other things that once we move the beaver into these areas, they'll hopefully take and create the wonderful habitat the beavers create. So it's kind of an exciting project, probably the first one we've done here in our region. In our aquatic section, I don't know if you read, but the Fish and Wildlife Service found that leash chub was not warranted for listing. A lot of that effort to secure that species, and a lot of the credit to secure that species, sits here with our northern region. Our northern region was able to establish 7 new populations here in the region, and the Fish and Wildlife Service looked favorably on that and felt like the particular species is fairly secure at this point in time. So that's good news. The aquatics guys are working on a second treatment for Johnson Creek, which is in West Box Elder County on the Raft River Mountains. The plan there is to try to restore a native population of Yellowstone cutthroat. And then as far as fishing right now, our community waters are fishing very well. We've got those all stocked up and encourage you to go out and fish some of the community waters. And right now the High Uinta Lakes are also fishing well. So that's all I have for the update, unless there's any questions. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Justin. With that, we'll go to our action item, fishing guidebook and rule. Drew? Or Paul, sorry. I see Drew's right at the first of the list there. We need to have you here more often then, I guess.
Huh? Once a year is enough, thank you. Good evening. My name is Paul Birdsey. I'm the Coldwater Sport Fish Coordinator for the Division of Wildlife Resources. Drew Cushing, Warm Water Coordinator, who usually accompanies me on these trips, had a conflict tonight, so he was unable to make it. I'd also like to recognize Paul Thompson and Chris Penny from the Northern Region, or the guys that do most of the work here. I just get to stand in front. The presentation tonight's divided into 3 sections. I'm going to spend a few minutes talking about the annual survey that we do, and then we'll talk about the statewide recommendations, and then finally the individual regional recommendations. For the last 3 years, we've conducted a online survey to try and get some input from the public. This survey was open for about a month. It's not a scientific survey. It's just simply a link is posted on our webpage. Anybody who's interested can take the survey and respond to it. We do other scientific surveys, but this one we're just trying to get as many people as possible to provide some input. This year we had 1,302 people take the survey, and they answered 13 different questions. The last question on the survey is just an open question. Tell us what you think. Do you have any suggestions about fisheries management in the state of Utah? And about 750 people took the time to provide their comments in that free form field. 294 of those comments were related to recommendations, or to regulations, I mean. The rest were related to management recommendations, such as stocking tiger trout in Strawberry Reservoir, or putting tiger muskie in Cutler Dam. Those have all been referred to the appropriate managers for their consideration as they work through the management of various waters. Okay. So I just want to go through a brief summary of the responses. These are, all come from that free form response field. I did go through all 750 comments, many of which had multiple suggestions, and we try to break them down into about 10 or 12 standard categories, which I'll present now. The most frequent response that we had there was that people want more stream access. And this has been going on for several years now since the passage of HB 141, which limited stream access on private land. People are still very interested in that. The second most frequent response was the same one that we've seen in years past, that they want to see more law enforcement presence out in the field. I don't exactly know what that means, but they continue to mention that in the survey. Two interesting ones that have shown up as no license or free license for people in active military duty, and also a free license for those folks over 70 years old. A couple of the other ones were spearfishing continues to be a pretty hot topic in the state, and we had twice as many people in the freeform field say that they want less spearfishing access as compared to people that said they want it more. And I'll point out this group at the end because it's becoming a bigger issue over the last couple of years, and you know, really made a blip on the graph this year, was that bow fishermen want to have access to all game species for that particular sport.
Paul?
Yes.
Are those vertical access numbers, are they're just their actual numbers? They're not.
They're actual numbers of people that responded to the question.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And finally, this has been an interesting trend over the last several years. 3 years ago, when I started summarizing the data, these two bars were about this equal height. It was 50-50 people wanting more regulation versus less regulation on our fisheries statewide. Last year it was about 60-40 people wanting more regulation versus less regulation. This year it's approaching 70-30 people wanting more regulation. And this falls in line with some other surveys that we've done over the past several years, which say that people want to move are wanting to move from catching a lot of fish to catching fewer but bigger fish. And they're equating more regulation with bigger fish. At least that's what we feel. And that's not necessarily true. In fact, in some cases, as I'll talk about later, having more regulations will actually be detrimental to the size of fish. But we are getting an increasing sense that people want to catch fewer, bigger fish rather than just taking home the cookie-cutter planter rainbow trout. Okay, moving into the actual regulations here. Last year, the legislature passed a law which allowed for the wasting of wildlife species or fish species with the approval of the Wildlife Board for that species on a particular water. And as you may recall, last year we talked and we added a carp statewide and a number of other species in waters, primarily ones that had catch and kill regulation or no limit on those species. And this simply allows them to dispose of the fish without having a quote-unquote beneficial use, which previously was interpreted that they had to take it home and eat it. This year, we'd like to add a couple more species and waters to that list. Blue Lake, which already has this regulation in place for an illegally introduced tilapia, as now we want to include pacu on that. Fish Lake, there was a management group put together of anglers and local interest groups at Fish Lake, and they've recommended a no limit for yellow perch at Fish Lake, and so we want to add yellow perch from Fish Lake to this disposal list. Gunlock, Sand Hollow, and Quail Creek reservoirs have illegal introductions of smallmouth bass into those reservoirs. They are all in the Virgin River drainage. By agreement on the Virgin River Recovery Program, we cannot manage smallmouth bass in that drainage. We already have a no limit. We're recommending a catch and kill this year, and as such, we also want to have a allowance for disposal. Last year, you may recall that the Wildlife Board directed us to explore an allowance for spearfishing on all waters that have a catch and kill or no limit for those species in those waters. So we followed through on that this year. We asked the question, there's five waters that actually fall into that category statewide right now. So we asked the question specific about those five waters. There was a Green River, had burbot, walleye, and channel catfish, and Utah Lake has northern pike. On those two waters in the survey, there was pretty good support for allowing spearfishing there. However, when we talked with the Green River Outfitters and Guides Association, that's GROGA, and the U.S. Forest Service that manages access on the Green River, they were opposed to having spearfishing there because of potential conflicts with the other users on the water. As you may know, the A section, that is that section just downstream from Flaming Gorge Dam, is very heavily used and by drift boats and shore anglers, and having spear fishermen in the middle of that was felt to be a conflict with those other users. Sand Hollow, Gunlock, and Quail Creek reservoirs were almost evenly split between those that were in favor and those that were opposed to the spear fishing regulation. We talked with the State Parks and Recreation folks that manage those waters. They had already anticipated this question and had been asking their users at those waters for the past year, what do you think about spearfishing in these waters? And almost universally across the board, regardless of whether they were fishermen or recreational divers, they were opposed to having spearfishing in those waters. Bottom line is that we're not recommending any change to spearfishing rules this year, with one exception I'll cover in just a moment, and that we would like to be able to proceed on a case-by-case basis in the future when dealing with spearfishing, rather than just saying that if there's a catch and kill or a no limit, we will automatically allow spearfishing for that species. And that'll give us the opportunity to assess any biological risks as well as the social conflicts that may arise from having spearfishing in those waters. So, just a brief history of where we are relative to the rest of the country with regard to spearfishing and how we got to where we're at. Six states right now have explicit prohibitions on spearfishing statewide. 31 states allow spearfishing on only non-game fish, that is carp and suckers primarily. One state allows spearfishing for non-game fish, but you have to have a special license to do that. Five states, including Utah, allow spearfishing for game and non-game fish on selected waters statewide. That adds up to, I believe, 44 waters. The other six states don't mention spearfishing in their rules, so we don't know whether that implicitly means it's not allowed or whether it implicitly means that it is allowed. So, okay, In Utah, prior to 2008, underwater spearfishing had a two-fish limit, one fish over 22 inches and one fish under 22 inches. This was different than what was allowed for hook and line anglers. And in some places, for example, Joe's Valley was allowed for spearfishing at that time, but there was a slot limit on there for hook and line anglers. They had to release spike between 15 and 22 inches. However, the spear fishermen could harvest a fish that was between that 15 and 22 inch limit. So there was a disparity there. So in 2008, we said, okay, across the board, spear fishermen have the same length limits and numbers of fish that are allowed to hook and line anglers. So in 2008, there were only 12 waters statewide where spearfishing was allowed. 2008, we took a couple away, but overall we added two additional ones, so it went to 14. And then last year, we added eight more, so there are 22 waters that are currently open for spearfishing, some of which are only allowed for some species, not all species in those waters. So this year we do want to add pacu at Blue Lake for spearfishing. It is an illegal introduction. It's that fish that's on the left there. It's a relative of the piranha. The difference is that it has flat grinding molars rather than sharp tearing teeth, but it's very similar in body shape. Okay, we had another wildlife board action that was investigate the allowance of unlimited at-home possession of your catch. So again, we added that question to the survey. There was pretty good support for that from the respondents to the survey. However, we did meet with the managers, our regional managers, and there was some concern about this regulation, primarily in the southern region, for two reasons. One is that they get a lot of non-residents camping out the whole summer at a lot of their lakes, and they also have a clientele that are residents down there that are much more harvest-oriented than maybe the anglers are in other parts of the state. So after taking into consideration their comments, and the fact that we have under-harvest on many of our warm water and cool water species statewide, what we're recommending is allowing an unlimited possession of these fish for warm and cool water species once they reach your house. That is that they no longer count in your daily limit. What we propose to do is to evaluate this for 2 years. We have some recent creel surveys on some of our waters. They will be surveyed again in the next couple of years to determine if having this rule increases harvest. That is, does it change angler behavior? And if it does, and it looks like it's significant, we'll proceed very cautiously with including trout in that particular regulation. If it doesn't have any effect, then we in 2016 we will be back here asking for trout to be included in that. And the biggest reason for that comes down to is that warm and cool water species are self-sustaining. We stock very few of those statewide. Whereas trout populations are sustained by stocking. And we need to think about those fish coming out of the end of a stocking truck tube as being equivalent to dollar bills going into the water. And that's where we get a little bit nervous. So the actual wording here is that the warm and cool water fish species, that is all fish that are not trout, and that's defined in the rule, at your permanent residence do not count as part of your possession limit. And the definition for permanent residence as we got from our attorneys is the domicile an individual relies upon in establishing residency for the purposes of Utah Code 2313 and 2, and that basically is the code that says, can I buy a resident hunting and fishing license, and or can I buy do I need to buy a non-resident license, and what address is associated with that decision. Moving into the regional recommendations quickly. Fish Lake, I mentioned we had a management group put together down there. They've developed a very extensive management plan. One of those recommendations is no limit on yellow perch. They're overabundant and they're stunted. So you have a whole bunch of 4 and 5 inch yellow perch there, and we want to increase the harvest on those fish. And then currently we have a trout limit of 4 fish, only one of which can be over 28 inches. And analyzing the data more closely as part of this management plan, we found that once those fish reach 24 inches, they actually switch to an almost entirely fish diet, and they grow very quickly after 24 inches. And so by restricting the harvest of fish over 24 inches, we're hoping to produce more trophy lake trout and splake, which is what the goal of most of the anglers that fish at Fish Lake is. Southern region again, Lake Powell, last year we included a no limit on striped bass at the reservoir. We've actually had that for a while, but we also allowed the disposal of striped bass without having to take them home. Striped bass get very overabundant. They become emaciated and aren't very good table fare. It seems logical that if we're going to allow you to sink the fish in the reservoir, you should be able to cut them up and use them as bait or chum to catch other fish, and that's what we're recommending this year. Boulder Mountain Lakes was another management plan group that was put together. There's 82 or something lakes on the Boulder Mountain. It's been a very complicated group of regulations for Boulder Mountain. The description of what is a Boulder Mountain alone takes up about a half a page in the guidebook, and easily rivals the description of any hunt boundary in the state of Utah. Mm-hmm. We're saying that's no longer important to define whether you're in the Boulder Mountain or not, so we want to remove that description from the guidebook. Most of the lakes there will go to the standard statewide 4 fish limit. There are a half a dozen of those lakes which we're proposing will have special regulations, and they will be included in the special regulation portion of the guidebook. All the rest, if they're not in a special portion, regulation portion, they have the statewide regulation. Again, a major simplification there. So these, I think there's 10 lakes there. They're currently closed to ice fishing. They're primarily small lakes that it's believed that anglers can impact it by, ice fishing. Most of them also have special regulations with regard to size and numbers of fish and everything. We are proposing that they remain closed. I should mention that right now a lot of the lakes on the Boulder Mountain are closed to ice fishing. Most of them now will be open to ice fishing. These are the only ones that will remain closed to ice fishing, or we're recommending remain closed. So Oak Creek Reservoir, one of those lakes that will have special regulation. There's a stunted population of brook trout in there. During the management plan process, we presented two options to the anglers. One is, you help us out, harvest a bunch of brook trout out of there, and hopefully we'll see better growth. Or number two is we can conduct a rotenone treatment down there. Angler said, let us have a shot at it. So we're proposing increasing the limit there to 16 fish. Let them take, you know, brook trout out. Hopefully it will be enough to prevent having to do a rotenone treatment there in a few years. We also said that we're going to give you about 3 years to make this work, so it's not an indefinite process. Okay, Sand Hall, Quail Creek in Washington County. This is that illegal introduction I talked about before, and we're proposing a catch and kill regulation on smallmouth bass in those three reservoirs. These reservoirs, again, they're on the boulder. They've been closed historically to ice fishing through work with DOT, Forest Service, and Jake Albrecht from the Wildlife Board was instrumental in making this happen. Access has been created in those areas, and we're now proposing opening those to ice fishing. Southern region, last one, I believe, for the southern region is we currently have on Johnson Reservoir a 1-inch by 1-inch restriction on the size of bait at Johnson Reservoir. Originally, it was believed that having a smaller bait would lead to less hooking mortality for tiger muskie, that they wouldn't attack it quite so aggressively, would be more likely to get hooked in the mouth. Recent studies that have been conducted throughout the Midwest show that exactly the opposite is true, that larger baits are less likely to be ingested deeply than small baits. So we want to remove the restriction from that water for that smaller bait and hopefully save a few tiger muskie along the way. Northeast region, same thing. Remove that 1-inch bait restriction on Cottonwood and Bullock reservoirs. I'll mention that there are two reservoirs in the northern region here, Pineview and Newton, which will continue to have that 1-inch bait restriction, and that's because there's a very active angler group that are avid muskie fishermen. We've been working with them. They basically want to see how does this experiment go before they're willing to buy off on having that restriction lifted at those two reservoirs. Central region, again, same thing. Blue Lake, a illegal introduction of pacu, making that a catch and kill species in that water. Bear Lake, this is just a clarification. In July 1st, 2014, with the new license structure, we allowed two poles to be used without having a second pole permit. And people that fish on Bear Lake can fish anywhere on the lake with either a Utah or Idaho license. We're saying if you have an Idaho license, come down to the Utah portion. You can fish with two poles. You know, but if you're a Utah angler and you go to the Idaho portion of the lake, you probably need to pay attention to what the Idaho regulation is, because they still do have a two-pole permit there. Okay, this is a clarification more than anything. Logan River in Cache County has had special regulations on it for years for the limit. It was never intended to include Tony Grove Lake or White Pine Lake in those regulations. However, the rule does not specifically exclude those lakes. So now we're specifically excluding them. They will go under the statewide regulation. You have four fish, you can use bait, you can do, you know, pretty much have the same experience that we've been wanting you to have for years up there. Southeast region, we have a new community fishery in Wellington, Utah. Was there the other day. It's really nice. It's coming along. They've got a little bit more work to finish it up, but I'm really happy about that, because we started that project 5 years ago when I was the manager in Price, and it's finally come to fruition. And it'll be a great addition to fishing down there. But as a community fishery, we want to put in the two fish standard community fishing limit. Just a couple quick informational slides for the board tonight. Recently, we contracted, the division contracted with a marketing firm to try and help us figure out what it is that people want when they go fishing and how can we influence their decision to buy a fishing license. So we interviewed two different groups of license buyers. One, those people that have bought a license every year for the last 5 years. They're our active angler group. The other one group, these lapsed anglers, they had purchased a license at least once within the last 5 years, but not for the last 2 years consecutive years. So we wanted to find out what was important to those two different groups. Number one, for active anglers, this gets to that more regulation kind of thing. The number one thing that attracts them to a fishery is that they know that there will be good-sized fish there for them to catch. And you can see what the other ones are. Number three was that there'll be lots of fish. And I'm guessing that way back in the dark ages when I started working for the division, that would have been exactly reversed. So it's just a paradigm shift that we've seen over the last several decades. For the lapsed anglers, they indicated the number one thing that prevented them from going fishing or would attract them back into fishing is that they wanted to know that the area would not be crowded. We don't know exactly what that means. We have to do some more follow-up work. We don't know whether they only go to community waters on Saturday afternoon when, you know, there's hundreds of people there, or whether they view having power boaters at a water, you know, is detracting to their experience. We just need to do a lot more work there. Again, and the number two thing is that there'll be good-sized fish. And finally, this comes from work that Chris Penny's been doing here in the northern region on Willard Bay, but it is indicative of the same kind of pattern that we're seeing from other waters statewide. Fish have indeterminate growth. That means that they grow throughout their life. They don't have a theoretical maximum size within, you know, other than a species maximum size. Their growth is determined by how much food and how much space do they have. So what we should see is a line that looks more like a diagonal from the bottom where these two lines intersect through their whole lives. It should grow all the way through their lifespan. What we see at Willard Bay, and again at other waters, is that they grow really well during the first 3 to 4, 5 years of their life. And then they simply stop growing. And this is probably a result of a lack of food for them to continue to grow throughout their life. Now, or at least food of the appropriate size. There's two things that can be done here to change this growth pattern. Number one, you can add food, a forage fish of a different size. And I'm going to tell you that's pretty much out of the question throughout much of Utah because of native species concerns and other things. Or we can reduce the population of predators so that there's fewer mouths to try and feed and we can continue to have this good growth. Now, it's been pointed out that very few people can make the conversion from millimeters to inches, so I'll help you out here. 400 millimeters is about 16 inches. 500 millimeters is about 20 inches. So there is an abundance of quality 20-inch wipers and 18-inch walleye in Willard Bay. What we really want to see are an abundance of 26-inch wipers and 22-plus-inch walleye. And the way that we accomplish that is that we reduce their numbers so that they have more food throughout their life. this particular RAC meeting last year, we had a lot of people advocating less harvest on walleye in Willard Bay. The work that has now been done shows that exactly the opposite is the case. We need to actually increase harvest of that species in order to get more quality fish in the reservoir. And with that, I will take questions.
Thank you, Paul. Do we have any members of the public who'd like to ask some questions on the presentation? Seeing none, we'll go to the council. Paul, I have a couple questions.
Okay.
It looked like possibly, you know, in the freeform section of your open access survey that a lot of your respondents were very, or let's say the vocal segment of our fishing population.
That's correct.
Yeah. Do you have do you put those same questions in a scientific survey that you conduct periodically?
Many of those same questions or forms of those same questions go into our statewide angler survey, which is done every 5 years. And we see similar types of patterns there in terms of the desire for increased quality and some of those other kind of broad generalizations that we talk about. We don't ask the same questions, so it's difficult to make the leap from one to the other. We used to just have the informational rack.
Mm-hmm.
We were getting input from 50 to 100 people statewide on our regulation recommendations when we had that. We attempted to have open houses. These guys here had a couple of open houses. What did you have, maybe 30 people or so at your most attended open house? So again, we were dealing with around 100 to 200 people statewide, which were influencing the recommendation process. This is not a perfect process, we understand that, but at least we're hearing from 1,300 people as part of the recommendations.
Okay. And then in the spearfishing recommendations, that was where you cited the online survey, that was the open access survey?
That's correct.
Okay.
When I refer to survey on this, with the exception of that last data slide that I showed you, when I talk about survey, I was talking about that online open access survey.
Okay, thank you. Jeffrey.
I just had a question from a follow-up question from last year at this time.
Okay.
When you mentioned that you were going to do a treatment and a fish barrier on right-hand fork of the Logan, and I think you talked about they were going to do that. Maybe I'm wrong, but I thought you mentioned that. And if you did do it, how did it go?
I'll let Paul Thompson answer that one.
Okay.
Because he's the one that actually does stuff.
Thank you for the opportunity. Very timely that you asked that question, because we just actually wrapped that project up in its entirety today. So we did a chemical treatment on the right-hand fork in 2012 and 2013. We do two consecutive years just to make sure we get all of the undesirable fish out of the stream. A barrier was in place before the first treatment. We did put in a second barrier this year just as a precaution. In case one failed, we'll have a second one in place. So we've been collecting eggs out of Temple Fork and adjacent drainage, and we stocked 450 Bonneville cutthroat trout into the right-hand fork last year after the second treatment. And this year, we had a great egg take and survival in our hatchery system out of Temple Fork, and we stocked 2,000 2-inch Bonneville cutthroat into the right-hand fork. So we feel we have enough fish reseeded in that stream. We've gotten the brown trout out of it, and that's one we can actually check off of our list is completed.
Thanks.
John?
When you were talking about possession limits, how do you propose to enforce that?
Well, enforcement has been difficult for that particular regulation throughout the years. Ken will talk in just a minute about the number of cases that we've made where we've directly gone in. It requires a search warrant to go into somebody's home to look at that. But there are other ways of dealing with that particular issue. We had a discussion with this with one of the law enforcement officers out in the Northeast region. That basically, if they get information from someone's neighbor or whatever, of this guy comes home every day with a whole bunch of fish, we'll start to watch that individual to see whether he's taking more than his limit on that particular day, whether he's coming back on multiple trips on the same day, and that's still illegal, and you know, will continue to be illegal. And then there's the soft enforcement approach that basically says that you cannot have more than your limit at home. That's the way it's been done throughout the years up to now. There are people that are sitting perhaps in this room right now that have an over limit of fish in their freezer or in bottles on their shelf. And that behavior has gone on and will continue to go on regardless of what our regulation is. What we've attempted to do in the past is deal with the egregious violators of that. For example, when I worked in the Southeast region, we had a couple people that visited we had one community fishery at that time. They visited our community fishery every day and took a limit every day. I was called about it by other anglers. I went out there and spoke with those folks and I said, you're not able to do this every day unless you're going home and eating those fish every day. They continued to do that particular activity. I asked our investigator to go out there and talk to them. They did. At that time, they basically told him that they were putting those fish in their freezer and planned on eating them all winter long. At which point in time, he was able to get a search warrant as a result of that discussion. We went in and found out that they had, you know, several hundred fish in their freezer, and they were cited for, you know, an extreme over limit. In fact, I think it may have even reached the point of going to a Class A misdemeanor at that point in time. It's not so much the enforcement as in going into someone's home as it does, and we're especially, again, concerned about the trout. It continues to provide a tool that if we need to, we have that tool, but we will continue to do all the things that we do anyway with that softer approach or that daily limit kind of thing.
Thank you.
Any additional questions from the council? Oh, Chris.
Well, I'm trying to understand wording on the possession limit also.
Okay.
One of the recommendations, the first one, is the warm and cool water fish species, all fish that are not trout at your permanent residence, do not count as part of your possession limit. When I look at the definition of possession limit, it says, for purposes of this rule only, two daily limits, including fish, at their permanent residence in a cooler, camper, tent, freezer, live well, or any other place of storage.
Correct.
So, what I don't understand is the difference between
the unlimited and the 2-day.
Right. It sounds like, holy cow, you can have your house filled up to the top of your windowsills with fish.
The 2-day limit is intended to, or that 2-day possession limit is a in the field possession. That is, if you go fishing for a weekend at, I don't know, Current Creek Reservoir, for example, you may have 2 days possession in your, or 2 days limit in your possession when you're out in the field. Now, that happens to be a trout fishery, so all you can have is 2 days in your possession. But if you were to go to Starvation Reservoir, for example, and catch a whole bunch of walleye or smallmouth bass, you could have your 2 days still in possession in the field. We don't want you to run a cannery when you're out in your trailer. You bring those home, you have 2 days possession limit, But you can go back out and go fish in the Starvation Reservoir, catch more walleye and more smallmouth bass without worrying now about whether you've consumed all the walleye and smallmouth that you currently have in your freezer. Please don't take any more trout, because then you get into that over-limit situation. And I admit it's confusing, and it gets to the point where a lot of people know about the regulation, some people don't. We inadvertently created an issue several years ago when we went to a no limit on walleye at Lake Powell. You can go to Lake Powell, fish there for a week, come home with 50 walleye. In fact, we prefer that you do. But theoretically, you could then not fish at Willard Bay or at Starvation Reservoir or Deer Creek Reservoir for walleye until you had eaten at least 40 of those fish. So we want to remove that confusion. It's our intention that if there's no significant overharvest occurring, that we will remove that confusion in 2 years. Right now, we just want to ease into it.
So the issue is, we're really talking about two different possession limits. One is your possession limit in the field.
Correct.
The other is your possession limit at your place of residence, but the rule does not define that there are two de facto possession limits.
And that's what our attorneys are trying desperately to figure out the language
for. The wording.
Yeah.
So do you anticipate more changes to the wording of this rule before the guidebook is published?
I anticipate that there will probably be an A and a B to that rule now. There will be an A, in the field you may possess two days, B, at home for, as I presented today, the B, at home for warm and cool water fish, you do not have a possession limit.
Okay, thank you.
Any additional questions from the council? Seeing none, we'll go to comments.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Ken?
Ken Strong, representing Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife. We, as a group, Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife, agree with all of the proposals that Paul has made today, with the exception that we would like all fish put on the, once they hit your primary domicile, they no longer count on your limit. There are several reasons for that. One of the worries that the division has talked about has been Panguitch Reservoir and Otter Creek. They've had problems in the past, or I don't know if it's been problems, but people in the past have come from, say, Las Vegas, come up, set up camp in their trailers, spent the whole summer there. Under the proposed home domicile and the setup that they had here on the screen, a person who does that must have an out-of-state license. Therefore, they are not able to possess fish other than their two-day possession limit in the field, because it is not their primary domicile. A primary domicile is not a trailer. It's not a cabin. It's your home that you live in, where you vote from. One of the things they talked about today was Oak Creek Reservoir, raising the limit to 16 brook to thin them out because they're stunted on their growth. And that's a great idea. The problem with that is, if you go to the Oak Creek Reservoir and you stay for a couple of days, you're entitled to 32 fish to bring home. Once you get them home, until you consume those fish, you cannot go back out and fish for trout. And the other big thing on this is, if you go to Flaming Gorge or Strawberry, you're entitled to 4 fish, not 8, and you cannot go back out until those fish are consumed. So our big thing is, we want to make things simpler. We want the limits on all fish removed once they hit your primary domicile. Those people so far that have been bottling fish or have fish in their freezer have basically been breaking the law for years. And whatever happens, they'll probably continue to do that in the future. I don't know how big of an impact it's made on the fisheries. They read the rule book or the proclamation just like you and I do. Obviously, they just don't understand it the way that the law is presented. In the last 20 to 30 years, this law of having over-limit in your freezers or fridge has been enforced approximately 3 times. It's basically unenforceable. Why do we have a law on the books that we cannot enforce, or we do not enforce? Either way you want to look at that. People have already been doing it. They most likely will in the future. It was stated last night that it's not fair to judge people in the future for what's been going on in the past. However, whatever the change is, it will be put in the proclamation, the same proclamation we've had for years that's had the laws in it. Obviously, they haven't been reading it or they haven't been obeying it. I really don't think it's going to make a big difference in the trout. I've talked quite a bit to Paul and Drew about this. And therefore, I would ask that you guys consider putting all fish with no limit after they hit your primary domicile, the place that you vote. Thank you.
Thank you. That's all the blue comment cards we have. Is there anyone else from the public who'd like to comment? Seeing none, we'll go to the council. Comments from the council? Paul, why don't you introduce yourself since...
Sorry for being late today. Paul Cowley, I'm with the Forest Service.
Oh, Jeffrey?
I just want to see if we could maybe get a response to the question about that. I thought... that you mentioned at the start of it that it was going to do some creel surveys and check it out, see how it went for a year or two, but I'd like to see kind of your response about the trout situation versus warm and cool water fish.
That question has come up in several of the other racks, and I'm going to have to give you the same answer that I gave those other racks, which is the answer is I don't know the answer. We don't know whether having a rule which will be stated in the proclamation that you have an unlimited possession of, now could have an unlimited possession of fish in your home, will actually affect people's behavior or not. We don't know the answer to that. That's why we want to do we have the creel surveys in place now. We will do similar surveys after this rule change, and we'll see if it is affecting behavior. If it's not, we'll be back. If it is, we'll be back to tell you that, too.
I guess maybe I missed it, but how many years are you going to do the creel surveys to determine?
We have 4 to 5 creel surveys that we do every year. Some of those will be repeats on waters that we've done in the last few years, too. So we'll have probably close to about 10, the survey on 10 different waters that we'll be able to look at what their historical harvest was versus what their harvest is after this change.
Paul?
Yeah, thanks.
Paul, we're going to have you stay here for just a second.
Okay.
So my question would be, if the law's only been enforced a limited number of times over the years when we've had extreme cases of this, do you foresee any way to enforce it in these extreme cases if it were to go to a rule that once the fish hit your domicile, then you don't worry about them?
No, because it will no longer be illegal to have. You can have 2,000 fish in your freezer, it won't be illegal at that point in time. And it's true. It's true that there's only been a few cases where it has been made as a primary investigation was for, having an over-limited fish. That's why the search warrant was obtained. There have been other cases, I don't know how many, where their search warrant was obtained because there was probable cause for a deer or an elk or something else that had been taken illegally. And as a result of that investigation, they found an over-limit in the freezer, too. Now, whether that case was actually made at that point in time, I don't know. I just know from talking with law enforcement folks that they've gone in on other things, found an over-limit of fish. But, again, it probably wasn't egregious, so it wasn't the principal cause that they had the search warrant.
Okay. Thank you.
Jim?
Well, I have two things. You can go fishing if you have a limit of fish in your freezer. You just can't keep any.
Correct.
So it's not like we're going to stop you. We're not stopping you from going fishing. We're just stopping you from packing your freezer.
Right.
And the second thing is we have lots of laws on the books that are rarely enforced. Burglary tools, for example. Every one of us has got a burglary tool in our vehicle. If we have a screwdriver, we don't enforce that except in unusual situations. So I don't think that's a particularly good argument that we haven't made a lot of cases. I think if it's a good law, it's a good law. And laws aren't necessarily just to be enforced, but they're to help us control our behavior. And sometimes they do. Sometimes I think, oh, that's against the law. I won't do it. So I think it's probably a good thing to figure out what we're doing before we launch into something. I'm in favor of this.
John?
Yeah, I think I would agree as well. And I think typically it's probably a better idea to ratchet down any kind of regulation rather than trying to decide that we made a mistake a couple years down the road and have to go back to that. So I would agree. I think that's a good idea and that we should exclude trout for the time being.
Paul?
Your question, this is a question on your presentation, if you don't mind me stepping back just a little, Paul. We talked about the one reservoir where we said we're going to open up to 16 brook trout.
Correct.
Would there even be a reason to put a limit on brook trout? Because generally, you can't harvest enough anyway, and if where we're going to end up is treating this water if we don't harvest enough in the first place, to me that would be a real opportunity to allow the anglers to work them over good to see if we can put a big dent in the population to allow those stunted fish to expand and put on some size.
Biologically, there is no difference between the 16 fish and an unlimited number. I mean, we would prefer to have people take as many out as right. they possibly could. There has been a reluctance from a social standpoint with regard to trout to saying that there are no limits. And that's just been kind of an agency policy. You'll notice that, for example, in Mill Creek, when we opened that up to increased harvest prior to the treatment there, Mike's original recommendation was to remove the limit. We got feedback that said, no, in those situations, we double the limit. We're really pushing the edge of what the agency has ever done before, based on the angler recommendation to say, let us have at it. Okay, we'll make that four times as many as you previously can. So it's a social regulation. It's not based on biology.
That's kind of what I anticipated. So thanks, Paul.
Jim?
If you had unlimited brook trout on one lake, then that would kind of defeat your two-day living in the freezer. Because all they do is say, well, we caught these brook trout in the lake where it's unlimited, and then we toss out the plan.
It does do that. And as I've already admitted, this is kind of a quicksand kind of thing, and it's very complicated when you have different regulations on adjacent waters, and even as mobile as our society is now, anywhere within the state of Utah, it becomes difficult. But we do want to ease into this as rationally as we can.
Bryce.
I kind of like the idea of keeping it simple sometimes. Less regulation. I know you have people that like more regulation, but sometimes you're just going to confuse people. I mean, I don't think you're going to change the way the people that are doing it now. I think they're going to continue to do it. But the problem is the people that are trying to obey the law, it's just going to confuse them you change it every year. It's just going to get, I think that's going to be really confusing for people if it'd be stay a little bit more consistent and just leave it the way it was.
So. And you're specifically talking about the possession limit.
Possession limit.
Okay. Any additional comments from the council? Seeing none, we do have the division's recommendation and one request for a change from Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife. So, Chair would entertain a motion. John.
I move to accept the presentation as presented.
Second.
We have a motion from John Cavan and a second from Jim Gaskell to recommend the Wildlife Board approve the fishing guidebook and rule R657-13 as presented. Discussion on the motion? Seeing none, I'll call for a vote. All in favor, please raise your hand and say aye.
Aye.
It's unanimous. Wait a second. I missed you?
Yeah.
Okay, so 1, 2, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 in favor. Opposed? 1. Could you state your opposition for the Wildlife Board's education? Or is it as you stated previously?
The fact that it was too confusing, just to keep it simpler. So, I think he's going to be back changing it here in a year or two anyway.
Well,
so.
In 2 years he will.
2 years.
Yeah, he'll look at it. So 8-4, 1 opposed. I don't have any other business. So entertain a motion, we adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Thank you, everyone.